Welcome to the Sabat Radio Show, shining a light on today's innovative leaders in business, technology, and government. Today's show is brought to you by Sabat Business Solutions, where our passion is in the process. And now, here are today's hosts.
Good afternoon and welcome back to Sabat Radio. I am your co-host, Todd Schnick, joined today by the president of Sabat, Ron Davis. How are you, sir?
I am doing just fine today, Todd. How are you?
I'm doing great. I understand that you are back on the road. Where are you headed to today?
Todd, I am in Blue Ridge, Georgia, up in the mountains on my way to Blairsville, then Athens, then Augusta. So, yeah, I'm being the road warrior again.
Outstanding. Well, I feel like we've never done a show where you weren't somewhere at some rest stop or a truck stop. So that adds to the excitement, huh?
Yeah, you know me. It's always somewhere. So luckily, it is not a truck stop this time. It's it looks like a strip mall parking lot. So, but whatever works.
Outstanding. Well, I know you and I are both really looking forward to today's guest. She is a 40-year veteran in education. She's been a teacher, a principal, a director of special education. Now she's a consultant. Welcome to the show, Dr. Nancy Golson.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, today we want to get into and discuss special needs students in special education. But before we launch into that conversation, Nancy, why don't you take a few minutes and just walk us through a little bit about you, your background, and the work that you're out there doing for folks.
Well, love working with education and with children, Todd. It has just been my lifelong enjoyment to be with kids and helping kids learn and helping teachers know how to teach little kids and principals and administrators know how to administrate school systems. Did retire from public school 2 years ago, and now I'm just working with school systems as they need my help in working with accreditation or school improvement or special ed issues, and trying to deal with all the funding issues that are going on right now. So how do you get a little bit more for a few less dollars is the big dilemma. So that's been my privilege over the last few years.
But tell us about your consultancy. Is it Red Crayon? Red Crayon? Tell us a little bit more
Red
about that
Crayon.
Organization.
Oh, well, that's a fun name. Thanks for asking, Todd. Several years ago, we had a character day at my school, and we had recently painted the columns out front as crayons, and so I decided the character that I would be Red Crayon. Couldn't find a book named Red Crayon, and so I wrote a book with the help of the children at my school. And so that kind of became my mantra, was the book. The PTA published it, and it was kind of fun to have a book about our school. And so Red Crayon just was the name that kind of stuck, and I have always liked red. I drive a red car, so it's always kind of a good fit and a different kind of name than any other consulting company. So Red Crayon is the name of my company and is kind of my favorite color.
No, I was just saying, anything to do with crayons it seems perfect for an educator.
That's correct. Now, I do, Todd, live in Auburn, and of course in Auburn we really are blue and orange, but that red has nothing to do with my allegiance to Auburn University.
Well, I didn't want to talk about anything negative, so we'll just move on to our subject at hand.
Okay. All right.
You know, we wanted to talk today about special needs students and special education, so why don't we just get right into it. Nancy, what are some of the challenges that face school administrators today when trying to offer the best possible education to special needs students?
Todd, the big problem right now is funding and funding and funding. Right now, we have this huge increase in the number of students with disabilities. Even last Saturday in the Wall Street Journal, there was an article on the wave of new disabilities swamp school budgets, and it cited some statistics that many of us in special ed know. There are over 300% increase in the number of autism cases from 2000 school year to 2009 school year, 127% increase in that same time in other health-impaired special ed students. Trying to provide the kind of support those children need is a huge funding problem. The other problem is having enough qualified special ed teachers who know how to work with some of these students with specialized needs. So those are, to me, the two biggest challenges that are facing us right now.
Nancy, just to add a little bit with that, I've read recently where some of the states are asking for reductions in, or be able to have reductions in the amount of money that they spend in special education. I've seen recently, actually, Alabama, there was a big issue in South Carolina where they took liberty in reducing the budget. They actually had to go back and give that money. But all to say is that, when you see that the type of the resources that need to be spent with special education because of the special needs students and states who are actually trying to get those budgets reduced, it does create a huge problem for everybody involved, especially, ultimately the education for those students.
Absolutely, especially with the increase in numbers.
Nancy, you mentioned, if I heard you correctly, a 300% increase in autistic students. I mean, is there something in the environment causing that, or are more and more people now admitting, are we doing a better job learning about autistic? Why the sudden increase?
Well, the problem is I think we're recognizing the needs of those students more than we have in the past. For many years, those students were not served. They dropped out of school. Many of them we just called mentally retarded. I don't think the number has increased. I think the number, the way that we've identified them, has increased. We are much more specialized in knowing how to provide for those kids. We've have not solved the problem in knowing what causes autism, whether it's a genetic issue or whatever. We just don't know what causes it. But I think they've always been here.
What effects have federal programs such as the NCLB, and explain what NCLB is, what kind of effects do they have on the administration of special needs students?
Now, NCLB is No Child Left Behind, and what that means is that the federal government says that all children must succeed at grade level. No Child Left Behind requires that all children perform on grade level. So that is huge for special ed people. Now, the good news is there are many special ed children in the past who had not been taught. And so now schools are recognizing the potential of these children, and it's causing educators to find different methods or strategies to teach these children. For the first time in many cases, children in school who are special needs are getting an appropriate education. The bad news is it's really unrealistic that they all will achieve on grade level standards. They just can't do that no matter what strategies we use. So part of me is very supportive of No Child Left Behind and what it's done for special needs kids. Part of me says you got to understand that a student with severe mental retardation cannot possibly perform on grade level. But we certainly can do more than we used to when we simply contained them in a classroom.
Yeah, Nancy, just to add to that, what I've seen with No Child Left Behind, and just, to echo what you're saying, there are certainly some good points and maybe some not-so-good points. And I think one of the biggest issues is because, of the funding, the federal funding that's tied to children meeting adequate yearly progress and being able to, have the high graduation rates. It's causing undue stress on district and state administrators in being able trying to hit some of the unrealistic measurements there in No Child Left Behind.
That's right, Ron. Every year schools are judged on how well they've met the standard, and each year it's a moving target, increasing each year the number of students that have met adequate yearly progress. And there's no way. You can't continue to improve and meet the needs of every single child, again, on grade level. But the target itself is not realistic. So that's a tremendous strain on school systems.
Define what that strain is. I mean, is it just merely a funding issue? Is it not having enough resources to adequately meet those goals? Is it not having enough specialists to deal with that? Or is it a combination of all that?
I think it's a combination of all of it. I think now being required to meet those needs for special ed kids, now trying to document all the work that you were doing and monitoring and then reporting the progress of those students, the strain is tremendous out there in trying to get students to perform and show what all you're doing and monitor those scores, because you've got to now, with a new requirement that's part of No Child Left Behind, which is a response to intervention, you cannot let a child fail over a long period of time, you have got to be looking at each skill and seeing if they've gained that skill. And if they haven't, you got to go back and do something immediately to help them. That's very difficult for a teacher. I mean, we're used to teaching, you know, chapter two this week and chapter three next week, but what do you do about the children who didn't get chapter two? And response to intervention says you got to find out who doesn't know chapter two and immediately do something to help that child make up what they've lost or have not gained and get back with the class. So those strains in the classroom are very difficult.
Well, you mentioned response to intervention. I mean, I understand the process for evaluating a student for special education has changed, and it's response to intervention or response to instruction. Explain more about that, please.
Okay. All right, Todd. In the past, children got in special ed after for a long period of time. There had to be a difference in what classmates could do and what the student could do. And then you would say, oh, my goodness, there's a difference in their IQ, their ability, and what they actually know, so now we'll call them special ed. And we'll put them in a separate room where they'll receive additional services. Well, what we discovered was that that method really wasn't working because children sat there sometimes for 2 or 3, 4 years and gotten further and further behind. They went to special ed, and because of we're not able to make up those many years. So the requirement is that teachers have to respond immediately after instruction to determine if a child has missed gaining, and if they haven't, do the remediation right then so that the child can move on with the class. Only after you have proven many, many chances of responding to not learning instruction can you even consider a youngster for special ed.
Yeah, Todd, you know, honestly, between the strain of the administrators and when we talk about response to intervention, this is exactly why Savad is involved in this area. So we look at everything involved. The issue with trying to get funding, the increased need and resources to be able to carry this out. And so when you have a decrease in funding, that means the increase in actually having people involved is very difficult. So you have to find other ways to be able to do this. Nancy mentioned the increased amount of documentation involved in the interventions and be able to carry those out and knowing which resources that you need and so on and so on and so on. That's where we have really kind of really honed in with our technology to be able to at least, you know, help automate this, to help save them a little bit of time so that they can be able to properly carry out an intervention. Because remember, ultimately what we're talking about is we're talking about a child's education. And so, you know, we want to make sure that all the educators want to make sure that they're doing the best they can to give that child the best education possible. But sometimes there just is not enough resources. So being able to actually offer some technology to assist is really what we're all about.
Well, I guess it wouldn't be a government mandate, if you can call No Child Left Behind that, without adding bureaucratic paperwork and documentation to the mix. Nancy, explain, when you say you're required to do some documentation, what does that entail? I mean, what in fact are you documenting and why is it required to do so?
As a classroom teacher, I've got to first judge who knows the skill and who doesn't know the skill. And I'm not talking the end of the end of the year, the end of the course. I'm teaching a concept of maybe the continents and the major agricultural resources from each of the areas. And if a child hasn't learned that, I've got to determine that information quickly and then figure out a way to find more time during the day to reteach that child those skills so that they've got that knowledge that will get them through what other additional tests and through other courses that they'll be taking. If I'm not successful and have tried several methods and still not successful, when I then reach out and say to my teacher peers or to my school environment, I need extra help, whether this be another teacher to come in, a resource teacher or something to help do some one-on-one with this student, I've got to show what all I've done. Then that teacher has to show what they've done. And then I have to talk to my principal about it and talk to a committee that is a group of teachers who work together to determine what's best for children. And if I don't have all the paperwork, I can't share what I've done. If a parent says, you haven't done enough to teach my child, I've got to have that paperwork trail also to prove to that parent all the different techniques I've done. One of the things that we are dealing with in some of these cases is children don't want to stay in school. They'll find a reason to miss a hard class. So what am I doing to even get that kid to stay in school and not be a dropout? What am I getting for him not to just cut that class for some reason? Again, documenting everything I do as a classroom teacher, and then as a school, documenting it for the system. That's the strain that's causing the teachers so much difficulty. Teachers want to teach. They don't want to be having to rewrite children's names and fill out paperwork on a child. They would like to be able to teach.
Well, Ron, you mentioned some of the work that Savad's doing, but Nancy, from a technology standpoint, can you explain what type of applications are being used to help special education technology-wise?
There's two different avenues that I see technologies working on, Todd. The first one is helping to monitor the progress of children, so that teachers can quickly evaluate the progress of the child. If I can do it through technology, have the child sit at the computer and answer the questions or do whatever, and it score it, that gives me that information quicker. We all remember the pictures of teachers taking all the papers home. Well, they still have to grade a lot of them individually, but some of that progress monitoring can be done on the computer. The second type of technology that's being developed is the flow of information on the progress of that particular child. What happens when he hasn't been able to learn, or has he been able to learn? What interventions have worked? What techniques have worked? What strategies have worked? What special kinds of programs we have provided for that child? So really kind of a picture of this child that is on the computer, of all the different kinds of things that have happened to him, and then when a teacher does something to help this child or has a bit of information, she can log that into this profile on the youngster and keep it totally up to date. So I see technology being two different kinds of things, one the child's using and the other is a way that the teacher's keeping the records.
Yeah, Todd, to kind of expand on that a little bit too, is that, you know, what we have really tried to do is we've tried to create a framework. And this framework is to tie everybody involved. And ultimately, it's about doing two things. Well, let me separate this for a second. I want to kind of expand on kind of what Nancy said in regards to you have a student, you have a student side, you have a teacher and administrator side. So on the teacher and administrator side, we're about providing this framework so that they can really do two things. One is save time, and the second is to be able to make intelligent decisions. And so when we talk about this, is that this framework has all the steps and it's organized so that the teachers can do what they need to do quickly, and as they do that, the people that they need involved in the process is automatically notified. And then at the same time, the administrators can see everything that's being done so that they can report and make the decisions that they need to be able to actually provide more resources. So that's the one side of that this framework. On the other side is we have the student. And the big thing that we've seen lately is about providing technology to get students engaged. As Nancy was talking about, a high rate of special education students do drop out. They lose interest. They don't understand why they have all these different plans and they're going to all these different meetings. And so they get disengaged. Well, what we're trying to do is also be able to provide technology that actually students can use to help them engage in the process of trying to help them understand what they want to do when they get out of school. And that's what we call transition planning. And so that they can actually see something that they have skills towards and they have a passion to do, and then they can actually get their education wrapped around that so that they have something exciting they can go after. So For us, it's about taking technology and put it, we're not about, and I've said this over and over, we're not about changing the processes already in place, because those have been put in place for a long time and they work. All we're trying to do is about automating those processes, about helping save that time, getting students engaged, making administrators more effective as far as making proper decisions, and be able to report what they need to report up to the feds so that they have, you know, there's regulations that have to be followed. So it's about tying that all together, and that's really kind of our mission in education.
Well, we've seen a big increase, guys, in the use of interactive technology, things like smart boards and projectors and so on and so forth, in the classroom to assist teachers in teaching general education students. Is there a place for some of that same technology in helping special needs students? Nancy, what do you think?
Absolutely. All of us remember being very intimidated with a teacher standing over us trying to watch us practice a new skill. You can imagine with a special ed child that needs so much practice how intimidated they would feel with an adult standing there saying, no, that's not right. You need to work this way. You need to do this. Technology is exciting. It's fun. It's quick. It never gets upset. It never runs out of time on you. It doesn't rush you. Technology supports what you do. And also the youngsters love it. They use it at home. How many texts do young people send a day? They can use this kind of stuff to support their education. And to me, it really does target the appropriate kind of intervention for these kids because, again, enjoyment, and it gives them one-on-one support.
Yeah, Todd, I would agree with that also. You know, there's terms out there that are called digital native and a digital immigrant. And you look at kids today, and they're what we call digital natives. They grow up from a very, very young age with technology in their hands. You know, some of the older part of us, such as me, grew up without technology but adapted to it at an older age. Well, if you're thinking about actually getting these kids engaged, and, you know, you want to get them engaged in the same way they're engaged at home, and that is using technology. Now, I will also be the first to say that you know, technology can be somewhat of a crutch. You can't just depend on it. It's about taking, you know, the proper lesson plans and integrating it with the technology. And that's what we're trying to do also. We're trying to take the best of what we do and be able to see where it does have a place with this 21st century technology so that, you know, that all kids, whether they're general education or special education, can be able to use them effectively to ultimately give them a better education and give them a better chance once they get out of school.
Well, guys, I hate to admit it, but we are out of time. Nancy, I think we've just barely scratched the surface in some of these issues today. I hope you'll consider coming back and joining us so we can get into some of these a little bit deeper.
Would love to. Thank you. Enjoyed being here.
All right.
I hope we can find another time.
Yeah, Nancy, before I let you go, do me a favor and share with the audience how they can get in touch with you, learn more about the work that you and Red Crayon are doing, and how they can get in touch with you.
My website is my email is the simplest way, and that is nancy@redcrayon.biz, B-I-Z.
All right. Nancy, again, it was a pleasure having you join us. Thank you for making some time for us.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps this episode. On behalf of Ron Davis, I am Todd Schnick. We'll see you next time on Savad Radio.